This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Dr. Doug Reed, and I am located in Abigwe, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
My name is Dr. Matthew Stranick, and I am located in Manakwisk in St. John, New Brunswick, which is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Wolastoqiyik Maliseet people. Hello again, everybody. You wouldn't know this, but this is actually the second of a very closely sequenced series of recordings here, which were perhaps even just in the midst of. You might be getting a quartet chronologically of some somewhat related-ish episodes. It's nice if we can pull it off. The technology seems to be cooperating. Which doesn't always happen, which I think actually is a good segue into this topic. Doug, why don't you tell us about the topic for this episode?
Okay. The topic is absolutely what you came up with. You make a lot of comments, and this one just hammered home exactly where we need to go. So it's the 12 grievances of an AdNonTech Christmas, or the 12 insights of an AdNonTech Christmas, depending on how much you want to grieve and how much you want to be helpful, how much you want to be hurtful. So that's what we're doing. And I want to thank you for it, because I never would have thought of it, because I always saw grievances as negative. And they're not. But it forced me to take another look at my definitions and come to grips with other stuff. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Dude, I am so grateful that I get to have like regular conversations with you and with Dan, but you know, in the context of the show where I can just say, "Ba-dum-bum-bum," I had a Seinfeld moment there, and I'm saying rather facetiously because we seem to be having some technical difficulties on some of our previous, you know, episodes. It seemed like I'm just like, "Ba-dum-bum," and you were just like, "Right." And it was like, okay, then the mystery episode, folks, as alluded to on some of the previous recordings. I'm actually at a New Year's Eve party on Mars, if you can believe it. And I think somewhere in there must be a radioactive Festivus pole. So with that in mind, Doug, why don't you just start us out here? I know that we're at a disadvantage, folks, because Doug sent me his notes, conscientious soul that he is. He sent me his. I know what his are. He does not know what mine are. And for the purpose of the notes, I'm sort of just thinking like, you know, we're not going to do them hierarchically, obviously. I certainly didn't generate mine hierarchically. Perhaps you did with yours. I just sort of think, you know, so I sort of got my six that I'm prepared to disclose, and I believe that's what you came up with as well. So we can just maybe trade back and forth if that suits in terms of an emergent format here, Val. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, I was just going to comment on that. Normally, for people that are listening, I go find some articles on a given topic, and then I grab a couple of little sound bites, and we talk about them. And this time, for the 12 grievances, I had a list from 1 to 12 and I have it filled. And then I thought, that's not fair because we're co-hosts. So what I did is I deleted all the odd numbered ones and I just left for Matt to fill in. So I have 2, 4, 6, 8, and so on. So I'm good with those ones, but I have no clue what you're going to say. So my improv and my connection to other ideas skills are going to be challenged today. And I'm looking forward to it. I think this is a cool way to just switch things up a little bit, especially at a time when we both get to relax and rest a little bit. So yeah, I'm good. So how about you want to start with number one? Because number 12 is the one where it's the literature we didn't get to, in case there's a spoiler alert. And there is some literature I want to talk about. But number one is, all the odd ones are yours. How about that?
Okay. Matt is odd. Can you believe it that this is not the first time I've heard this, Doug? I can hang with that framework, pal. Okay. So in that case, I'm going to scroll through the well-composed, somewhat in advance, WordPress post here. Okay, so my grievance number one, as I put it, which just because you have to have a number one, not, again, necessarily hierarchical. Grievance number one, as per Matt Stranick, ed tech practitioners who aren't interested in education. Oh. I think that's a legitimate grievance. What do you think of that, pal?
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. But my argument with that goes right back to our second episode a year and a half ago, where we have a naming issue. If you can't be an ed tech person and ignore the ed part of ed tech. If you want to be a technical person, then fine. If you get hired to be an ed tech person and you don't care about the education, you need to find another job.
Or the other part of it is just sort of like they get hired on the basis of a skill set, a tech skill set, and then they're just sort of given to understand that they can like blow the education part out of their ass. Pardon my framing of that, but it's just sort of like education's whatever you make of it when you're in a setting with students. It's like you got, yeah. Anyway, I don't want to overly profane. I don't want to get... You know, I don't want to have to bleep things out with Camtasia and not have my girlfriend who's we have a listener, Doug, Paula, my girlfriend. She listens to this. She listens to this every time all the way through. And she listens to the music one time all the way through. And she's like, I do only listen to them and watch them because of you. But I still like to think we got at least one committed regular fan. So. Shout out to Paula, because she's not the only one, but every audience member counts on this endeavor, man.
Absolutely.
Wow. That was completely a diatribe from out of nowhere, except that I don't have much more to say about mine. It's sort of like, you know, I'm just calling it what it is. I think we go back and forth on this. I think it's clear what our thing is, but it's just, you know, things that annoy you, things that bug you, things that would cause you to, you know, start a podcast and perhaps go on to some rants and include those rants in your writings about it in public. And, yeah, I don't know, things to grieve. Anywho, we could and shall go on that one. Two, which is
that's
to say
right.
Number
so
one.
So the second grievance.
Correct.
Yes, the second grievance of an Ed Non-Tech Christmas is technology challenges. Because last couple of weeks, not even the last couple of weeks, like how many different setups have we had and how many different pieces of software and how often has it been, okay, let's go redo that. That didn't work for whatever reason. And it's not just, it's here for whatever reason. Whenever I turn the microwave on in my house, it kills my internet connection.
That is the most maritime thing ever, though, dude. That is just the epitome of maritime internet things. I mean, honestly, like, well done for living the paradigm, man. Honestly.
So since we're ed non-tech, we are doing a lot of learning, and that's the education part. And sometimes I just hate the technology. It's like, it needs to be simpler than this. So when I'm trying to leave my wife down, like, no, don't warm up that coffee. It's ridiculous in this day and age.
You got to conspicuously leave like kerosene burners around, just like in the kitchen, just sort of strategically start just. And one day the whole house turned into a net zero home.
Oh, I'd love to get there. I would.
Yeah.
I hate paying the power bill. I understand we need to, but I hate it. So that's the technology challenges. We have our terminal degrees, and we're still a year and a half later dealing with technology challenges. So
I think it's cool, though. And I like, Doug, at the beginning of this, that you sort of took a very broad view here that grievance is not to be construed negatively as such, right? It's sort of a challenge statement. It's sort of optimistic. Like if you weren't feeling optimistic to complain or articulate something as a complaint, you'd just be, I'm beaten down by it, or I ignore it, or whatever. So it really is an act of optimism, which I think actually speaks to some of yours later on, where we maybe have drifted away from sort of our critical focus on this show. I know what yours are, and you don't know what mine are. So anyway, man, that's a good one. That
is good. Sure enough. Thanks.
Yeah. So what's you want? Should I do one, or should we do like maybe a couple and a couple? Because you got some readings too.
Yeah, that'll be number 12. So how about you do number 3, and then we'll just keep alternating, and then for 12, then we can talk about the literature.
Okay, cool beans. Just rightio. Grievance the Third, as it were. Grievance the Third. We can't agree on a single aspect of terminology. Which again, I think is something that has informed, like, that's just like, oh, I've listened to your show more than once, and this is like surprising. Like, no, this is just things that are sort of a perpetual thing, you know, that's coming up here. And to me, I just like, yeah, I mean, because again, I think this is where like the budgetary sort of mandate associated with our field becomes a little bit more entrenched and insidious. It's just like, every institution is going to call every set of things that they have, you know, different terms to accommodate their stakeholders and to accommodate budgetary, you know, acquisitions, as it were, in any given fiscal year. And it's just so then when any, you know, professional or even academic literature sort of is generated based on those practices, it's just like, well, you know, we got to first clarify we mean this, that, and the other. And that's, you know, to its credit, what the good practitioner review literature does. That's why you clarify your terms and you have your frameworks and you say very specifically under these, that, and the other conditions. But man, I just, the other aspect of it is just like, we're a friggin' flash in the pan, you know, like hype of the year, whatever you can attach, like, well, and now I'll have my smart board, you know, surplus for the next decade because no one's going to use these 5 that I'm buying right now at a cost of $20,000 each or whatever it costs back in the day. I'm sure they never cost that much per unit, but, you know, you get my drift. So that's sort of what I was thinking with that one, bud. Yeah, it starts with faulty and, like, mercenary use of terminology, because if you don't define who you are and what you're about, someone else surely will. You know, I think Gandhi said that.
Probably.
If you don't define yourself, somebody else will. I mean, it wasn't the Mahatma, I'm sure, but, you know, just anyway. So again, it's sort of like our field, if you don't have, I don't mean to say like gatekeeper the crap out of everything, but again, it's just, it would be great to have sort of common sets of terms, common sets of alignments, or a common sort of sense of like, as a sector or a subsector, you know, the ed tech field or whatever within the larger education endeavor, we could be doing a lot better. And I'm glad to see that there are some movements by certain bodies of the Canadian government to sort of make some of those distinctions, I guess, like the I'll butcher the acronym or even the name of the organization if I try to say it, but some of these internet research sort of funded publicly, you know, things, not National Research Council, but I'm running out of breath for this. thanks for the opportunity to speak to this. Wanted to add, or why don't you just throw us our next one? Or why don't you throw us our next one, dude?
Okay. I think the fourth grievance would be the AI Pivot trademark. Because AI Pivot is not online learning. AI Pivot is not, it's like the pandemic pivot. It wasn't online learning, it was panic. And what's happened this last year, what I've witnessed, is the AI pivot is the same thing. It's not online learning, it's not face-to-face learning, it's not blended learning, it's not hybrid learning. It's a panic. It's how are we going to deal with this? And there's an awful lot of people that have no idea and are frantically trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So we'll get there. It'll become another tool. It'll become the radio, it'll become TV, it'll become the film strip, it'll become the computer, it'll become the calculator. It's not there yet, but we're headed in that direction. So we'll get there. But it just drives me nuts that so much stress and so much time and effort's going into trying to take the old thing and reform it a little bit so AI can't mess it up. Well, if AI can mess it up, it deserves to be messed up. Let's come up with something new. Let's come up with something that works with all the technology. That's my fourth one. I don't know what your thoughts are on AI Pivot trademark.
I really, really, really appreciate, Doug, that you're sticking to the intended and appropriate and professionally and academically valid term of AI Pivot TM. If you talk about it in any other context, I don't even want to hear it. It's just, so for all of you who are doing your doctoral theses and such and stagger across this in 7 years and you're searching out the transcript, which will surely be available for a nominal fee on a clickable, you know, thing on our surely unsurpassed budgetary thing, which we're going to make money off of, our budgetary widget. Global domination is in the cards for the ENT in 2024 or thereabouts. Wow. I totally need to be rescued, dude. I've lost the plot of my own ramble. Where are we going with this next one, bud?
Good.
What's
number five is you.
I'm up number five and I'm still alive. It's ain't no jive. I used to try and rap for my children sometimes and to great hilarity for me. And then eventually just like, Dad, we're not three anymore. Like, fine, you're not three anymore. Okay, so my next one, I guess, is grievance the fifth, as it were. There's a pretty good career to be had by watching others teach and lamenting about their shortcomings. I'm just like, if you want to be just like, yeah. Oh, they don't know even how to friggin' do this basic thing. And I don't know, man, at institutions which shall remain undisclosed, this whole like, just this running pipeline of like, just, it's not even like it's unprofessional. It's not like people are just, you know, being like rude. It's just like this sense of like, gatekeeperdom just on the most minuscule, like, well, if you knew how to use the system better, or well, if you knew how to like just interpret these directions which I've given you, just this like, and it just it, and then it just, it doesn't end in the like, I guess bad customer service is sort of what I mean, but then it sort of, it inculcates a sense of like enhanced whatever, like being above what you actually do, and that can go into back channel and form a sort of, I don't know, a sort of us against them mentality. Again, I'm not speaking from any direct or specific experience. I'm sort of hypothesizing a bit, just based on what happens in a staff room with an attitude problem, I suppose, is like I've experienced that in a few different contexts, not any single one. I mean, it's just there's pockets of people who just like they want to elevate themselves by kind of like, oh, your lack of knowledge is compelling to me. So I just think we got like maybe more of that in our field than we ought to. I don't know. That's anything you feel like adding there, bud? I know it's kind of wide and kind of weird, but that one. But
well, no, as a former K-12 teacher, former public school teacher, I remember going to social events, and one easy topic for people was let's bash teachers.
Yeah.
Everybody has spent 12, 13 years in school, right? Unless you dropped out in grade 10 or grade 9 or whatever, most people have finished high school and spent that time, and they all had a bad teacher. Because the odds of them not having a bad teacher is pretty slim. And instead of talking about how wonderful the good teachers are, doesn't get you the laugh or doesn't get you the chuckle in when you're having drinks at somebody's party around the holidays. So
right.
Take the shot, because you sat there for 200 days and you're in that person's class for 6 hours a day or an hour a day once you got to high school or whatever that happened to be. There's always going to be something negative or something you could take a shot at. And I see that with some people in that took jobs at Centers for Teaching and Learning that maybe shouldn't have. If you walk in and you want to build a relationship with somebody and the first thing you do is take shots at, you did that wrong, you shouldn't have done that, don't you know how to do that? Yeah, you're not building that relationship. But if you come in with, hey, I have some suggestions, that seemed to be a struggle, here's a way to make it better. And it's, how do we make this work? How do we have insight to help rather than just, well, let's slam them because they're easy to slam. Those are my thoughts on that.
I agree with everything you said, and I would like to buy your pamphlet.
Okay. Yeah, I have one for sale. It's $1 million.
A kajillion, bazillion virtual internet, thingamabobbers.
Yeah, I was going for the
document. Can you take an IOU on that, pal? I hope you can take an IOU on that one.
Absolutely.
I'm good for
it.
As you can see by my opulent Martian surroundings.
If you got some land on Mars that you're going to sell me instead to swap me for my pamphlet?
I'm telling you, like, Jeff Bezos is just out of here. We're actually at his compound, and this party is lit, okay? So.
Nice.
These are the facts, and okay, we're sticking to them. Yes.
That's it. So the grievance number six is capitalism over education. And you already touched it a little bit with one of your comments. But this is a drum that I have beat for 40-some episodes, and I'm going to continue to beat it. And I've just done some reading to figure out why I hate it so much. There used to be measures. Oh, you want to be a good academic? You need to do this. But when they were targets, it's easy. Yeah, aim for that. Aim for 3 articles this year. Aim for 10 articles this year. Aim for whatever the number is. But now that it's a measure and you must do that, then the target's gone. You have the measure. That's what you're going to be based on. And that's why so many people in post-secondary are just looking at their research. How many articles did you publish? I don't care what committees you were on. I don't care what the feedback was from the students that you taught. The only thing that matters is that number, the number that used to be a target and is now the measurement. And that's been brought in to rein in the power of post-secondaries and profs, and let's keep this capitalism train running. Again,
Can you believe this, Doug? First of all, everything you said is certainly on point. Can you believe that some institutions academics and indeed entire departments can feel so overwhelmed by such, as you describe, mandates, explicit mandates to produce or perish, which is one of these jive-ass things in post-secondary that people just seem to accept. But, you know, it's just like, okay, so they have been known to then do surveys of institutions, which to check out like fraudulent practices in academic, where you just kind of you pay to publish, right? You just like, some institutions, which shall remain nameless, have had kind of a big kerfuffle about this in public and involving union grievances and settlements and harsh words in the media, such as it is. So honestly, Doug, I think everything you said is just kind of, on point, and it's going to continue to manifest. And I just think that these mandates just instill insecurity in faculty and staff members who are new, or maybe at new institutions. New institution syndrome is sort of like, well, we don't quite know what we're doing yet, so this will do until we get someone who does, and people kind of run rogue. And, again, you get some very sometimes media coverage, I would think. Because I'm only talking about hypothetical situations here, bud. But one might think. One might envision such scenarios. So that's what I got thinking about there, bud.
I haven't experienced it. Yep, we're on the same page. So what do you got for number 7?
Gosh, 7 coming in like seventh heaven, or not. Okay, this is more like way more in the abstract, I guess. This is me kind of pulling back, as it were, to the situation of culture as a whole or something. So grievance the 7th, the complete and utter ascendancy of the English language in nearly every aspect of technology, and the bros who design the stuff. It's sort of just
never would have thought that. But go ahead, please. I'm interested.
Only to the extent that English is the de facto language of any technology format, be it web browser. I mean, you know, I know that you go all the way back to like, you know, HTML, and like you go, well, okay. Things are neutral, but ultimately, you know, you have some very privileged, largely American dudes, males, who are just, they're the ones who kind of starting with the hobbyists, right, in their garages building the stuff. I mean, that was Bill Gates. He's a hobbyist building his hardware sets and selling them. And Steve Jobs, whatever, R.I.P. And then it's just the whole software sector and development of the things that constitute the online aspect of online education is built to accommodate technology formats that have been designed by and for English-speaking, white-skinned people, usually male, usually young or middle-aged. And you just, that's the paradigm that all the other stuff is based on and built upon. And I just feel like there's just no critical discernment or recognition of that. And I know full well that I am the most friggin' hypocritical dude on earth, because I'm clearly the person that benefits from that the most in its current form. I cannot even parlay any language besides English with any credibility. And to be honest, my English skills are questionable at best, a lot of the time. So, again, I don't know, man. I don't mean to be all just like po-faced about it. It's just sort of like, man, where, you know, it would just be cool to see some active experiments. I just feel like with the advent of the AI pivot TM, I see a lot of opportunities for translation on the fly that can sort of help perhaps significantly reduce the path that you have to get authentic translation. And if you can start going at that, then you have a platform to maybe review some of this other stuff as a whole. So that's one of the things that makes me optimistic. And that's the optimistic part of this grievance, I suppose, that we now have tools to actually perhaps redress past issues with greater capacity. So there we go. Bit of a really long tangent on there, pal. Was there anything else? Was there anything you could speak to from that? Or
yeah, there was a couple of things. When we look at the World Wide Web and the way it was invented in Sweden, or not Sweden, Switzerland, whatever, 30 years ago, then we take a look at the American English. Every time I go to a website now, not every time, but most of the time, I get this thing that says, we use cookies. Do you accept cookies? But cookies are only cookies in North America. When I lived in Australia and when I've been in the UK and Ireland, they're biscuits. So would a British website use biscuits instead of cookies? What? And that's just one of those biases. It's just, yeah, that's the term that the Americans used. So that's the term we're going to go with. And how does that fit into everything else? Because it reminds me of when you look at a Mercator map and all the countries in the north look so gigantic. But when you actually look at the size of them on a non-Mercator map, wow, okay, they're way smaller. And so there's built-in biases to what we're doing, and we're disadvantaging some people.
Yes.
And when we do that disadvantaging, we're not even aware that we're disadvantaging them. So putting a spotlight on it saying, hey, we got to deal with this, is a great place to start. So I like your grievance. That one makes sense.
Yeah, man, thanks. That's kind of thank you for I'm glad that my delineation there wasn't too far off the mark. I'm glad that kind of landed. And I guess, you know, I really appreciate, again, what you sort of brought to this earlier. A grievance is an opportunity to speak to something from a position of problematic, yes, and with an opportunity to change, which, you know, is kind of fundamentally at the heart of the whole endeavor. I mean, it was literally never meant to be like, let's just accept the status quo. It never was, right? So that's a preamble to some of yours later on. Yes.
My number eight, my eighth grievance is lifelong learning and play needs to be more of a priority. We don't play enough. We don't give students the chance to play enough. And that's how I learn. When you look at some of the research, and I haven't looked into it, and I don't have the authors' names and stuff. Young people in general learn quicker when they play with a topic than when here's the book, here's the whatever, here's the instruction, go learn it. If we can figure out how to make it more play, people learn quicker, and not just quicker, but they also learn in a way that reinforces it more. So they actually learn it. So they have the comprehension and the knowledge, not just the regurgitation of facts for some quizzes. We need to do more playing. We need to get off that treadmill of here's another sheet to fill in. Here's another sheet to fill in. Here's another, right? Go do questions, all the odd number questions on these two pages in math, and then we'll check the answers. We need to get away from that and get to the play part where they can build the learning and construct the learning in their own heads. That's my thought for number eight.
That is so rad. I like every aspect of that, man. That was very elegantly expressed and articulated. I mean, I don't know. did you find yourself, like, did it take some thought for you to arrive at some of these ones for you, or did you just kind of nail them out just in one? I was just like, and this one, I had 5 minutes or so, and I'm like, I'm gonna throw this down and kind of move on. Has this been long seeping with you, or can I ask?
Some were long, some have been percolating in my brain for a while, but I went back through the show notes for a bunch of old shows to say, is there anything left there? So I went back to the notes, and none of these things should be new to any longtime listener. We've talked about this stuff before. And some I just pounded out, and I originally pounded out 12. And then I thought that wasn't fair. You needed to have half. So I then had to go, and I deleted the half, the six that weren't, that I wasn't as interested in talking about. So that building the list too big and then editing it down, that really helped tighten up where I was with this episode.
And thank you for that. I appreciate the clarification there. And I guess I would just say, to speak to the point of play, that makes me and my, post-secondary mind, or like even like training outside of academia mind, go to gamified learning and simulation. Mm-hmm. I associate those pretty strongly, I suppose, when you talk about play and how it's really meaningful in terms of setting up, you know, cognitive and social development such that you can achieve higher level stuff. I mean, that's why, you know, largely your fundamental character is baked into you by the time you're five. You know, you're basically, your ability mm-hmm. to learn, your ability to reason, you know, to a very large extent, you know, it's just like the musculature is really, you know, formed pretty early on. And having the opportunity to play and have, you know, robust, meaningful opportunities. And again, I'm speaking as a parent to kids. Who are both pretty successful in sports. And I just, you know, again, I think of play and learning now as being something quite different, you know, than what that meant for me in those similar years. So, again, lots to ruminate on there, pal. I appreciate that one, I suppose, quite a bit. So.
Right on. We're 2/3 done. You're number 9. What's your 9th grievance?
Swing, bada bada, swing. So my next one, as I click to the tab and then scroll back up. Right, grievance, the 9th. Okay. Lots of talk about AI, and this, I guess, is one of my ones about AI. All right. AI doesn't, can't, won't cause cheating any more than the internet did. Like, oh, there's a thing called the internet. Oh, you mean you can access things from somewhere other than your own location? Yeah. Like, we made it, you know, Y2K didn't cause society to implode. Like, friggin', just as sort of like, you know, AI, and then you pull the friggin' fire alarm and just sort of, come on, dudes. It's a little sub-function of the internet, and it's got as much, it's potentially very helpful. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that Donald Trump, one of the dumbest humans alive, didn't manage to toast the world with nuclear weapons is a pretty goddamn good testament to the security industry's ability to friggin' handle and adapt to emergent threats. Because he's a human, like, emergent threat in all aspects of his being. You know, it's like, I just sort of think AI, you know, like Terminator movies, they're gonna, you know, it's like, Nah, one of the dumbest piles of rock, failed entertainer, failed entrepreneur, led the most powerfully, you know, militarized country in the history of history. And you didn't fucking slip on a banana or turn some third world country to toast. I mean, fuck. Well done, everybody. Anyway, that's what I was thinking with that one, dude.
Now, part of a lot at the beginning of that, it reminds me of about a year ago, one of the images we shared on one topic. I had a test, like a how to graduate from high school test from the 1880s, and I would have failed. Because the majority of the questions were Greek and Latin. I took Greek and Latin as a course.
Doug, you surprised me every episode. Every episode, I learned something new about Doug. And just real casually, I used to do all this boating off the coast of Australia. Yeah, I took friggin' Greek and Latin in school because I was just, do go on, but
yeah, no, it's when we talk about, you initially said the cheating thing with AI and cheating and not more than the internet, we just have to adjust what we're doing. What do we actually want students to accomplish? What do we want them to demonstrate? What do we want them to learn? And then we have to match our assessment to it. That's all we have to do. It just match the assessment to it. Okay, number 10, my 10th grievance for an EdTech Christmas is we have got away from Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed lately. Back in the day, we would mention Pedagogy of the Oppressed at least once an episode, at least sometimes many times in an episode. And I think it's been months since we've mentioned Freire's work. And I have a copy on my desk that I stare at every day. And I'm hoping you went and you grabbed your copy. Yeah. It's just interesting that we've kind of drifted away and we haven't overtly mentioned it. So I just wanted to bring them back to make sure everybody's still aware that we need to keep going. Right? Freire is at the core of a lot of what we're doing here on the podcast.
Let us never be free of Freire. And it's funny because, like, I know. That's why we're going to have an AI do the transcripts for us and we can monetize the transcripts, the little foam moles like that. Have an AI, it's just like, I'm just like, there's going to be a robot chimp that'll do things for me that I don't, that, you know, it's just like, yeah. I mean, it's just, Trump did not kill us with nuclear technology, and for that, I think we owe both technology and the security sector a pretty large round of applause. But I got, Pedagogy of the Heart. I'm going to start correcting people when they say pedagogy wrong. I'm going to be like, you mean pedagogy. Pedagogy. Nah, I mean pedagogy, friend. That's what it's called. I don't know what you're calling it. Pedagogy. So we got Pedagogy of the Oppressed and Pedagogy of the Heart still. I've got even a couple more books I was going to throw on just sitting on my computer, but I think that's just going to ring us up completely for that one. But I'll save those for the next episode because I think we're probably going to record another episode after this in pretty short order. So Radical Like a Cannibal, man. That's what I said. Radical Like a Cannibal. So,
okay. And you're number 11. What's number 11?
Swing, bada, bada, swing. Okay. Grievance the 11th. We do an underwhelming job of mentoring and supporting each other. I had like a lot of expletives like written in there initially, but I'm like, there's a slight chance that my kid's teacher or my kid or somebody who follows me on social media in a perfectly innocuous way might go, okay, well, I'm just going to click on this podcast link because Matt's hyping it and Matt's a nice guy and I know his kid. And then, you know, just it's like, no. But it's just, We do such an underwhelming job of it. Again, it's like mentorship and leadership when it's there and, you know, it's actually happening properly. It's fucking great. But it's like the oxygen. It's like in Total Recall, do you remember with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes.
Where like, you know, and they show the scene, some scene where like some dude goes out into the uncompressed Martian thing and like, you know, it's like, it's just, that's my contempt for lack of leadership or just a vacuum of sorts. I mean, that's just what it feels like. I mean, you know, as the recipient of bad leadership. So, and, you know, the notion here is just you got to be proactive about it. It's helpful for it to be planned. You know, not leaving things with a, leaving thing, putting things outside of a process and leaving things at, like ad hoc. I mean, it's like, we're loose, we're cool. I mean, it's fine. That's how we roll. But it actually, when it comes time to like, you know, maybe grieve something or go, wait a minute, I wasn't given any mandate to do this or that until whatever, you know, it's just, there's nothing on paper. So who does that advantage? The individual educator or actor or the completely 100% hypothetical administrator? You know, it's just like an absence of documentation only benefits the person who has more power in a certain type of relationship. So I would say, like, have a friggin', you know, onboarding process that friggin', and if you say process, you're wrong, that matters, that's meaningful, that is, like, legit, and is, like, actually, like, again, just, like, instead of just maybe the canary in the coal mine method, like, hope you gravitate towards the right people on this department, kid, you know, or whatever. Again, that's the post-secondary aspect of it. I'm sure there's others, and I eventually, my time outside of academia will probably exceed the time that I've spent in, you know, you never know, but right. Grievance. That was my final one, Doug. That was grievance the 11th. Was there anything you wanted to add to what I just said there, or shall we just
move on
to the 12th?
Yeah, I just need a second because my life, I have been really cynical about mentoring and leadership. Because
okay.
When I was a kid and playing sports, what mattered was winning the sport.
Okay. Right?
Whatever it was, the team had to win or I had to be the best or whatever. And there was a lot of leadership and mentorship on how to do that in a sport. And then I got into the workplace and it was like, ugh. And I assumed that only the wrong people got into leadership roles, right?
Yes.
Way more often than not, it was the climbers, the people that were looking out for themselves and sticking it to everybody else. But right now, I am witnessing mentorship like I've never seen. Like, there are people mentoring and helping others along in a way that I've tried to do my whole career, and I've been complimented on it, but I've never seen for myself. But I'm seeing it happen with somebody else, and I think, thank goodness, there's hope. These people really exist. They're not myths. They're not urban legends. These are actual mentors and actual leaders. So I'm so happy that they might be outnumbered, but they do exist and they are amazing.
Whoever you are, if you listen to this podcast, I'm giving you respect. You're the, we got great hopes for you, and we expect and hope for, in a kindly, unpressured kind of way, we anticipate the benefits of what you're doing will manifest themselves even more in your 2024. So, whoever that may be, sounds like they're on a good path. Sounds like they got good people around them, man.
Yeah, it's so incredible to watch. It's like, wow.
That's what's a really nice, you know, that's a really nice kind of segue out of what I had put as a pretty critical sort of piece and sort of a nice way out of it, you know, sort of a positive, current, contemporary example. So awesome. Good. So what's our last one, bud? What's number 12?
The 12th? My 12th grievance is the literature that we did not get to.
You did speak to that at the very beginning. You foreshadowed that, as it was.
Yes, I really did. It's almost like I planned it.
It's almost like it's a literary device in a Dickensian novel, but who am I to say?
Yeah. So I have three little articles that I'm going to talk to really shortly.
Radical.
One is Ferguson, Toy, and Eaton, Contract Cheating and Student Stress.
Okay.
And it's about why students cheat. Why do they cheat on their test? Why do they cheat in class? And it's all about there's no one simple reason, but basically it's life stress. It's how do the students participate in social institutions? What are their social relationships like? Some students don't care if they cheat. They've been told by their parents or society or whoever, they need to get that piece of paper. Okay, to get that piece of paper, I got to do this in the class. I'm not learning it, so I'll just cheat.
Can I just say, having spent a very short amount of time working as a teacher in Asia, my kid's mom, she's from South Korea, and she just basically said, under no circumstances will my kids ever do education there, not because of language, not because of whatever. It's because the pressure exerted on young people to achieve in the uppermost percentile on these scores is so inculcated, and it's so the stress, that goes as that's, I think, what you want to maybe look to redress as opposed to, the behavior in the first place. It's be proactive about it. So anyway, that's what it made me think of, dude. Sorry.
Nope, but that's exactly where it's at. It's why are we doing it to these students? And people that are doing it don't understand basic math. 50% of students are going to be below average in math. They just are. And we can't squeeze all those into the 90s, the 91s, the 90. Some people aren't going to do well in math. Some people are going to fail math. And we need to come up with a way to say, that's okay. Let's find what you're good at and make that work. Anyway, the next thing is talking about grievance as a negative. In New South Wales and Australia, they had grievance officers in education. And Barkan 93, Sociological Theory and Educational Reality, talks about these grievance officers, because that New South Wales government found there were six groups of disadvantaged peoples. There was disadvantaged women and girls, Aborigines, migrants, the handicapped, children in rural and isolated areas, and children in socioeconomic disadvantaged areas.
You actually have a graphic that goes with the grievance officer that is pretty damn awesome. I'm sorry, just the visual you got to go with that one is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was really happy with it, because this was a positive. This was a, let's put somebody in place that understands some of the situations and knows how to work the system to help the people that are being disadvantaged by the system. It's not a, I'm going to whine and complain and bang on the door until you do something. It's, we put the grievance officer in place to help. And that's their job. It's, how do we help these people? We know there's something going on with the system that is not helping them. How do we help? So I love the positive part of how New South Wales came up with that grievance officer. Two last little things, because I know we're running on. There's LaPlaca, LeGrin, and Van Ham. How to write really good articles for premier academic journals. I hate this so much. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. If you're a young or you're a new career researcher, and you read this article from 2018 about how you have to write, this is overly simplistic. There are some suggestions would stop me from reading that article. One of the things they say is, a typical manuscript that's ideal is 25 to 40 pages. I am not reading a 40-page article unless I'm really neck deep.
What if it's double-spaced?
That doesn't make it better. Get to the point. Say what you got to say.
Playing the advocate of the chump. Playing chump's advocate. No, I got you, man. So your hatred of this is incandescently white hot, and you felt sure to include it on this special episode.
This is my grievance. Somebody wrote that with that title, and people are going to believe it. And that's a problem. Right? I there's just so much about
who
this.
Who earns to that? It's...
The number of figures and tables should each be about 4 to 6. Are you kidding me? Okay, so that means I have to have 8 to 12 figures and tables to make it an ideal manuscript? I have over 100 publications. I've never done that.
Doug.
Anyway.
Do you have over 100 publications?
Yeah. Nobody cares. It doesn't. Whatever.
I care. I find it hugely fascinating, and I think we have to do an entire episode just taking apart your voluminous and no doubt varied and checkered and, shall we say, highly esteemed and, if not legit, body of work here, pal. I just...
Sure.
Speaking of producer's friggin' license, I'm saying I might want to, you know, I can throw out mine, but I mean, mine's just a little, you know.
Everybody has their own path.
Cool. Anyway, but that's interesting. Go on.
The last one is Doing Harm. Magolda and Weems, 2002, Doing Harm, an Unintentional Consequence of Qualitative Inquiry. And periodically ask yourself the questions, are my actions harming others without falling into paralysis? I don't think people do that enough. Because writing is a political process. And I have discovered that. I have discovered writing is not just, there's your research and here are the results. There is a political process going on there. And attempts to minimize harm are moral, not technical processes. I can't read what you're showing up. My
That's pedagogy of the oppressed.
Oh, again.
I was holding up the Pedagogy of the Oppressed book to sort of in solidarity with what you were articulating, Val.
And I included a lot of pictures this time.
You did.
To go to the website to take a look at.
There was a lot. More than a few, there was a lot. But we got them most. You add a column feature to the WordPress page and then upload a separate thing to the column. So it's actually fine. I didn't mean to be snide when I was like, there's a lot of these this time. Just my process with those is that I go from the Google document, and then what I have to do is copy and paste into a Word document and then save as to my desktop from whence it is uploaded. So every time for those pictures, that's the process, and it's great. It takes me almost no time, but it's just like, wow, there's a few of them, but they're great. They're all quite good. Some of them even more so than others, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
And as if you're listening, go to the website, take a look at them. My favorite one is a CBC screen capture, and it's Internet down in Tumbler Ridge, BC, after Beaver chews through fiber cable. And that just reminded me of technical issues.
That is so rad. That is so rad. Like, utterly rad. Oh, before we go, though, Doug, because that's awesome, and there are more awesome visuals than that one. We can both agree that.
There's a bunch in there for teasers for people to go see.
Yes, consider yourself teased. People. Yeah. So what do we got for the word, phrase, and question of the podcast, my friend?
The word of the podcast is airing of grievances. If you've ever watched the TV show Seinfeld, It was season 9, episode 10, The Strike. And that's where Festivus comes from. The whole concept of Festivus with feats of strength, airing of grievances, having an aluminum pole instead of a Christmas tree, all that sort of stuff came from there. And there's a couple of pictures in there referring directly to the episode. And it was very funny, and it's taken a life of its own in the last, whatever, 26 years.
Yeah.
Phrase of the podcast.
So sorry, dude. Sorry. Here's the English teacher in me, the former English teacher. Your word of the podcast could be construed as a phrase of the podcast. Do you know what I mean? A word
you
is
are
like,
absolutely correct.
So I'm just like,
as a history major,
what I can do. So, yeah. So my solution to this as an English teacher is I put brackets around airing of in front of grievances. So then technically it's a single word, but it's got a modifier, not to be misconstrued or miscalculated or malperceived as the phrase of the podcast. You know what I mean, friend?
That is a fantastic solution. Very insightful.
Thank you, pal. Takes a village to come up with this stuff, right? So no, that's our phrase for the podcast. I'm about to type it in WordPress.
Pedagogy of the Oppressed. Because I made sure we said it at least 3 times. And you showed
I think you mean pedagogy of the people watching the video. I think people need to say
I think we have a different dialect.
I think you say tomato, I say tomato. I think you say potato, I say potato. Let's not call the whole thing off.
What about potatoes and tomatoes?
I think this is going to be grieved absurd redundancy in future episodes of this show, I think is my glimpse of the Ed Nontech future here. Pedagogy, say it properly. Anyway. Cool, my friend. So what else do we got? Is there anything else before we wind this particular episode down and then go take a break and then go through, you know?
Sure. The question of the podcast for me is when we're asking questions, when we're airing grievances, are we trying to be helpful or hurtful? I try to be helpful because it's easy to be hurtful. Any ding-dong can be hurtful and just take the shot. Are you trying to be helpful? Being helpful means you've thought about it and you've come up with possible solutions if you see a problem. But that's where I'm coming from. When people say stuff now, I have started to ask, are you trying to be helpful or hurtful? And that puts anybody trying to be helpful, that rocks them back on their heels. So I kind of enjoy it. So that's the question. Are you trying to be helpful or hurtful? Especially when it comes to grievances and that sort of thing. But that's all I've got.
I think that's a really great way to go out. I really like the, critical does not equal negative vibe that we've really taken from this. Yeah. So I think that's a great way to go out. Let's call the whole thing off until next time, except next time for us.
Goodbye. Hey, everybody. See you next time.